Next item on the agenda, presentation of the report of the scientific review of Virginia's blue crab management plans and regulations. Good afternoon, Mr. Riley, Deputy Chief.
Good afternoon. We had a very good process that the commission endorsed, and it was the Blue Crab Regulatory Review Committee. There were three meetings held, one in June, one in August, and one in November. All good discussions. Some of the information you just heard was also discussed at this committee at various meetings. You can see that it was a diverse grouping of scientists from different states, one from South Carolina, Dr. Wenner, two from North Carolina, Mr. Henry and Dr. Wolcott, Dr. Honig from VIMS, Dr. Lipschitz from VIMS, Dr. Miller from Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, Ms. Begley from Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Dr. McConaughey, Mr. Robbins, and Mr. Travelstead comprised the committee. I'm not aware that there's been really a pulling of scientific expertise like that, other than, say, a workshop or some type of a forum, whereas for the purposes of this committee, it was really to look at our regulations, look at some future solutions to current problems. For the most part, what's in your books, the report, the slideshow will follow or excerpt pieces of it. However, on top of everything else, in terms of the regulations, the committee found that trying to achieve this target exploitation rate, which is a harvest rate. So an exploitation rate is the rate at which crabs are removed on an annual basis by fishing activities. And that rate has a target, which is 0.46, or 46% of the population is the desired target to remove that rate of crabs, compared to 53%, you'll see a little bit later, which is the threshold or an area that you really don't want to go beyond if you can help it. The group overall several times talked about direct measures, and many of the members talked about effort control. They felt that the management measures adopted by this commission in 1994 and on, all the way up until really 2007, with the measures on the addition of the sanctuary and allowing some of the black and brown sponge crabs to be taken after July 15th, they felt those measures could have staved off even further problems in abundance. However, they felt that mostly those type of measures were indirect, in that they may have an effect, but it's not a direct effect, because there's so much effort in the fisheries that you really need to look at an effort control strategy. In addition, the committee found that should that effort control strategy need some time to develop, then there are select elements that they made recommendations on, which are more traditional to the types of management that this commission has done in the past, where there could be improvements and it could have a positive effect on the status of the stock. However, the committee cautions that these adjustments should not be considered as a substitute for an effectively designed effort control system. You can read along with me, but on most of these slides, I'll just hit the high points because there are many slides. Since 1994, our objectives for the blue crab resource and fisheries has been to promote an abundance of exploitable crabs. Those are ones that are 2.4 inches and greater. You recognize we have a peeler fishery, and right now the minimum size is 3 inches. So what's known as the age 1 plus crabs are those exploitable crabs. They can be exploited in the spring at a smaller size. They can be exploited throughout the year once they meet the limits of the 5-inch for the males or the mature females. Despite the stepwise implementation of a 22-point management plan, there's no evidence that the plan has increased either the baywide stock abundance or its harvest. The baywide abundance estimates of age 1-plus crabs or exploitable crabs from the 2005-2006 survey, which is a baywide survey, it's a winter dredge survey, it covers 1,500 stations in Maryland and Virginia. That value is 122 million crabs. It followed one of an earlier year of 143 million crabs. These are just the 2.4-inch crabs and greater. This abundance estimate is as much as 70% less than estimates from the early 1990s. When you look at the harvest, the 2006 baywide harvest was about 49 million pounds. It's among the lowest recorded since 1945. And if you stop to think, we have mandatory reporting. Maryland has mandatory reporting. So to put it in context, it's very low compared to times when it was voluntary reporting. The average harvest is 73 million pounds from 1945 to 2006. This gives you an idea of the exploitable stock of crabs. And what you can see is this period in the earlier 90s, very high levels. It fell off somewhat through the mid-90s, and it's been sort of in a trough ever since. And this is the end point right here. The survey is going on right now for the next set of data. That will be available sometime in mid to late April, probably. You see this threshold level of abundance. That's what's known as the overfished line. And if the stock should fall below that line, it constitutes a major problem. Everyone recognizes that. Right now, there are baywide efforts to figure out what the triggers are that should satisfy some action. And Jack's going to talk a little bit about that at the end of this presentation. This value is 86 million crabs, age 1 plus, 1999. It's not a mathematically derived overfished limit, such as you might see with striped bass or other fin fish. It's an empirical basis, an observed basis. It's the lowest value. When you look at the harvest, you see several things. One thing you see is for Virginia that there are oscillations, there are ups and downs, but generally there's this downturn over the last several years in Virginia. Maryland is even more pronounced because from about 1992 or 3, generally they've had a downturn all year. One thing about the independent set of data, and it's not dependent on the fishery, it's independent of it. It's a survey. It's the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey, and it has a very good predictive capacity. About 86% of the variation in the abundance from one year is explained by the harvest in that year and vice versa. And so it is possible using that survey with 86% confidence to determine what might the 2007 harvest be. And this was done several months ago, and the prediction was 48.7 million pounds, that red triangle. In fact, the harvest is going to be somewhere around 43 million pounds. Maryland had its lowest harvest ever at 18 million pounds as their preliminary estimate. We're thinking it's going to be 23 million pounds to 24 million pounds in Virginia. We have some preliminary data. So the final somewhere on 42 with the most would be 43 million pounds. So very low baywide harvest.
Rob, can you go back just a second? You mentioned a number that maybe went by me, but I thought you said 23 or 24 million pounds.
For Virginia, the estimate right now is around 23 million pounds. For Maryland, it's about 18. 43 would be a high estimate.
For the numbers, Zach, that's fine.
Yes.
Thank you.
Could be a little lower than 43 million. Especially troubling to the committee was that the spawning potential has remained at low levels since 1992. I think you've had Dr. Lipschitz here to show information on the spawning grounds and how low that has remained. And this has remained low despite several expansions starting in 1994 and ending in 2002 of the spawning sanctuary. And when you look at the information from the Winter Dredge Survey on the spawning potential, you see that it's low here, and you might be able to say it's lower here, but this spawning potential is based on crabs that will spawn the following spring or summer. It's still very low compared to these early years, and you have to keep in mind this is across the bay, and so it's really not the same thing as what's on the spawning grounds. This is the spawning grounds July through November, when VIMS collects this data right on the spawning grounds, and again have this consistently low abundance of potential spawners. There have been variations in the past, but I think in general you can see that this is too protracted, too long of a time. You're not going to be able to read all this, but I wanted to sort of economize on slides, so I'm just going to read a little bit of this. The committee did talk about the role of the environment. The committee also found that after they talked about the role of the environment, their conclusion was that despite environmental variation or flux, the end result is management needs to try to keep the status of the stocks on target. The exploitation rate or the removal rate should be able to be adjusted despite environmental conditions. And there certainly have been some environmental conditions, including those by SAV and disappearance of some SAV, which affords protection to the smaller crabs. In addition, oyster reefs, there have been changes in oyster reefs, which are an area for feeding for larger crabs. There definitely have been changes in sea surface temperatures. There have been some problems with hurricanes. Of course, Hurricane Isabel, the most recent, but also Tropical Storm Agnes, even in 1972. I know VIMS felt that that was sort of a turning point in a lot of the problems with blue crab. Nonetheless, managers need to make sure that the exploitation rate is at or near the target, despite the environmental conditions. This is the exploitation target over time, starting really in 1989, going forward to 2006. And one thing you can see here is the target, which is 46% removal per year. And then this threshold, which is really a danger posting of 53% per year, you can see that the threshold has been breached several times, and you can definitely see the target has. I think when you look at the target, 11 out of 17 years, there's been an overage of the target. And when you look at recent years, there's really been only one year that's been under the target, and that was 2005, which had an exploitation of about 0.35 that year. I would wonder, if this is the science, then why are these exploitation rates so high and things haven't been done? I think the answer is that the science has just caught up to where this can be presented to you in the last few years. There was some methodology which used a different approach to derive the exploitation rate, and it was the length-based method. And it was Dr. Honig's method, and he himself advocated abandoning that method because it was not appropriate for blue crab, especially if you consider there is a terminal molt. On the other hand, the beauty of this approach is that it's strictly dependent on the abundance from the survey, the catch from the fisheries, and it can determine the exploitation rate. So it's the classic fisheries paradigm for calculating exploitation rates. The one thing that is not in here, and Mr. Taylor brought up early, this is not based on recreational data. That doesn't mean recreational data hasn't been assessed. In 2000 and 2001, Dr. Cynthia Jones and Dr. Julian Ashford were contracted by VMRC to do a study of the recreational harvest. The conclusion was then it was about 4%. The rest was commercial. The conclusion in Maryland was it was closer to 10% and 90% commercial. So it is very difficult to assess the recreational harvest compared to commercial harvest, but nonetheless, some studies have shown that it's fairly small, especially in Virginia, and you would expect with the way conditions have been for several years that's the way you would expect it. This is a control rule, and you have a vertical line here. Anything to the left of that vertical line is considered as overfished. That hasn't happened yet, only because this is not a mathematical construct. This is an empirical one based on 1999 and that 86 million crabs of age 1 plus or exploitable crabs. And you can see that a number of years, just like you saw in the previous graph, are above the threshold of 0.53, and many years are above the target of 0.46. These earlier years are all in the early 90s, with that one graph that you saw that started out in the earlier 90s where the age 1 abundance was fairly high. Those are these data points right here. You see 2007, and again, this was done a couple of months ago. There's been an adjustment to this so that, in fact, this was originally thought to be 0.63, 63% removal in 2007. The value now is 58% removal. Nonetheless, it is over the threshold. Something the committee looked at, and it was provided by Maryland DNR, but through work at CBSAC, which this commission also participates in, are sex-specific exploitation rates. And what you can see is that the female rates, female blue crab exploitation rates in general, have been much higher than the male exploitation rates. And I think one thing that we know in Virginia, that except for perhaps the peeler fishery, 70% of the harvest is female. And so if we are roughly equivalent to Maryland in most years in their harvest, it shouldn't be surprising that the female exploitation rates are higher than the male exploitation rates. Just to turn to some of our data, and again, just a lot of information, but you can show that we did have some fairly high harvests in the 40 millions. Once we turned to what is considered some consistent mandatory reporting in 1994, harvest stayed in the 30 to 35 million pound range. Starting in about 2001, there were declines, and it sort of varies here. I think you can put this figure or something close to that for 2007, but it tells you again that our harvest has been fairly low compared to other times. If you put that harvest in terms of number of crabs, you can see that there is a big change, because one of the big drop-offs in the last few years has been the peeler fishery. And the peeler fishery, per pound, has a lot more crabs than the hard crabs. So if you drop the peeler fishery, it's going to have an effect on the numbers of crabs, which were down at 67 million crabs in 2006. You can see the years where it was 148 million, 103, 120. You can see other years. But again, the last few years fairly low. The committee looked then at the various fisheries, and they looked at the winter dredge fishery, and they did note the early attempt, which happened in 1994, to limit entry into this fishery, and the fact that what started out as 385 licenses fell below 225 in recent years. So it was a very good plan. It was really an industry-backed plan at the time that was brought to the commission. And you can see that 79 active crab dredge fishermen were in the 2005-2006 season. However, this means 146 potential licensees are inactive or part of latent effort. And here's the performance of activity, and you can see how it's drastically fallen off. The crab dredge harvest during the last 17 seasons have ranged from 10 million to 1.4 million pounds. At the same time, the 2005-2006 harvest was 2 million pounds. But when you look at the proportion to the total harvest, the 1996 crab dredge fishery was 20.5% of the total harvest, whereas the most recent one we have data for, 2005-2006, means that only 9.2% of that 22.5 million pounds total was from crab dredge. This shows the harvest as well. It really mirrors the activity. The committee looked at information about the females, and they, in fact, looked at that sex-specific figure that I showed you earlier, and they looked about the winter dredge fishery and indicated that proportionally the number of females or the fraction removed in the last 6 years is similar or greater than in earlier years. So despite the fishery being reduced in size, when you look at the removal of females, it's still the same or maybe even a little bit higher. And a question was, is the current barrel limit, 17 barrels, achieving conservation of female crabs as the commission intended? And then the other question was, were there to be a slight rebound in abundance, what additional measures might be needed to offset renewed interest in this fishery? And that's the latent effort component. The recommendation of the committee on the winter dredge fishery was the commission should develop a plan to preclude any expansion of fishing mortality in the winter dredge fishery relative to other fisheries and address the risk posed by latent effort in this fishery to a potential recovery of the population or the increased regulation of other blue crab fisheries. For the Peeler fishery, I think you know the parameters there, but just as a refresher, Maryland requires the Peeler size to be 3.25 inches up until July 15th. Then it switches to 3.5. The Potomac River is just a straight 3.5 inch minimum size. And the committee noted interjurisdictional inconsistencies and also looked at the situation that of the white sign Peeler, not only in the enforcement difficulties, but also with the fact that you're liable to harvest some green crabs, especially in spring, and they are especially susceptible to mortality. Peeler harvest doubled, as you can see, really starting back in 1994, going on up from 2002. It's since returned to low levels. Since the Chesapeake Bay fisheries depend heavily on annual recruitment of blue crabs, and the Peeler fishery is the first to encounter crabs from the previous year's spawn, it shouldn't be surprising that this fishery has trended down in recent years. The recommendation on the Peeler fishery was to develop an effort control system in order to prevent overfishing and constrain mortality at the target level, which is the exploitation target of 0.46. Recognizing the NEPR control system will take some time to develop, as an additional precautionary action, the VMRC should consider raising the minimum size limit on Peelers. A higher minimum size limit would provide some benefits to the spawning potential and would reduce waste associated with green crabs. And it also may be beneficial interjurisdictionally. The VMRC could also consider prohibiting the sale of white line Peelers, but allow harvesters to retain white line Peelers for their own use in their shedding system. And it goes on to say it would be beneficial for all Mid-Atlantic jurisdictions to have similar rules on white line Peeler harvest. the largest fishery, the crab pot fishery. During the last 20 years, it's accounted for at least 74% and as much as 87% of the total harvest of blue crab in Virginia. And it's mainly hard crabs that are harvested by the pot fishery, with some minimum amount of peeler crabs, 3 to 5%. And exclusive of the winter dredge fishery, it harvests most of the remainder of hard crabs landed in Virginia. Any conservation measures that impact the crab pot fishery will have the most impact on the annual exploitation rate. Substantial reductions in effort in this crab pot fishery will directly conserve female crabs and can lead to a lower exploitation rate, since the sex composition from this fishery is often 70% female. As part of the crab pot fishery, the committee also looked at other components. One component is coal rings. And as you know, we have two coal rings in effect, a 2 5/16 inch coal ring and a 2 3/16 inch coal ring. In these areas, the main stem bay, seaside of Eastern Shore, and Pocomoke and Tangier, it's lawful not to have that larger coal ring open. In all other areas, you have to have that larger coal ring open. The committee found that the coal rings do promote an increase in the spawning potential, just based on the idea that some of the escapement of the spawning stock compared to an absence of coal rings does lead to an increase in spawning potential. The committee understands that the harvesters in the main stem bay are concerned over the documented escapement of legal mature crabs through the coal ring, and that seaside harvesters encounter a greater abundance of small mature crabs than bayside crabbers. However, 69% of females harvested in 2006 by crab pots were from the main stem Chesapeake Bay or seaside area, and these areas, as I mentioned, are allowed to obstruct the larger coal ring. Since only 6% escapement of legal females has been estimated for the smaller coal ring, there would be tangible benefits to have mandated use of the larger coal ring in all areas. The committee also looked at crab pot tagging. In fact, with the very first meeting, that was one of the initial recommendations, that there had to be a crab pot tagging or marking system. Staff told the committee that, in fact, back in 1999, that was also proposed, was part of a regulation. There was never funding, but that it had been one of the elements of the management plan. It just never carried forward. And you can see that any type of enforcement or getting some baseline understanding of effort and then further monitoring the effort that is there is going to take crab pot tagging or a marking system. If managers choose to further expand the sanctuary, for example, you can have the crab pot system as sort of a zoning where you would be able to look at having harvest in one area versus the other, which we've never really been able to do. But the real point made by the committee was, how on earth can we assess the effects of reducing effort when we really have no way of knowing what effort is now? Now, granted, we do have a mandatory reporting system. The effort reports are not as good as harvest reports. It's difficult for everyone to report about their effort. We have a nominal basis that can help us, but if you want to really have a good system, it will be crab pot tagging. The recommendation, it's a fairly long one, but there should be corrective action to constrain mortality towards the exploitation target, and there should be an effort control strategy that will allow for not only controlling but monitoring effort. The VMRC should consider any measures that would reduce effort in this fishery. This is the crab pot fishery overall, 87% recently of the exploitation. Any effort reductions in the crab pot fishery will improve the exploitation rate on female crabs, and that's because 70% are females. Since an effort control system will take time to develop and implement, the VMRC should consider in the interim requiring use of a unobstructed coal ring in the main stem bay, Pocomoke and Tangier Sound. And that's a typo. That should be 2 5/16. This size coal ring will allow additional escapement and reduce waste. The sanctuary, another one of the main management elements of your plan, really is something that has grown from 146 square miles to now 1,022 square miles. Several additions. A couple of the additions were where industry favored the sanctuary over having to have that large coal ring open in the main stem bay. And the committee did discuss that a little bit. The Virginia Blue Crab Sanctuary provides protection to female crabs, but at the same point, there are also crabs that are not in the sanctuary. And I think that one of the things recognized by some committee members were you can debate whether it provides 65%, 70%, or as high as 75% protection to crabs within the sanctuary. How about everything outside the sanctuary? How about the crabs that do move outside the sanctuary? There's the sanctuary with the recent addition in 2007 in green, the 1946 part of it, and that what was done in 2000 and 2002 with a little bit done in 1994 on the eastern side. The committee found that there's no evidence of any recent increases in spawning stock biomass despite the expansions. Perhaps it has forestalled an even lower level of spawning biomass, although you saw how low that biomass really is. And the sanctuary protects female crabs within those borders. And as I mentioned, there could be movement outside, and certainly there are crabs that are unprotected once they are outside. I think one interesting comment from the committee was that since there's a fall run, which is tantamount to a spawning aggregation, should the sanctuary be open before these crabs have a chance to spawn? So when crabs down migrate in the fall, there's still exploitation going on in different jurisdictions. And before the sanctuary starts up, it runs from June 1 through September 15th right now, there's also exploitation occurring. And there's some work that's been done by VIMS and ODU as far as the effectiveness, again, of crabs within the sanctuary. And there was even a discussion of a year-round sanctuary. It did not reach consensus on the committee, but it was envisioned as a very narrow corridor that went throughout the bay that would protect female crabs, for example, in the down migration, to give one example, and it would be year-round. The recommendation was that the sanctuary does afford protection of female crabs, and the harvest prohibitions are June 1 to September 15th. As there is spawning activity, because the lower peak of spawning is really in the springtime, there could be a May 15th through September 15th date attached to that sanctuary where harvesting was prohibited instead of the June 1 start date. Effort control, this was by far the most significant aspect. That's why I put something about it as the very first slide. And I'd say most of our third meeting, the committee did talk about effort control. And again, they commend the commission for employing a multifaceted approach to constrain efforts, focusing primarily on pot limits, moratorium on license sales, or a cap, if you will. They understand that effort controls are difficult to enforce given the large area, number of fishery participants, the required time that law enforcement must spend on any one suspected violation, and especially the current lack of a pot tagging system. They indicate that the fundamental basis for any effort control strategy is an initial measure of existing effort in terms of pot days or number of pots actively fishing. And the mandatory reporting system at least has that type of information if it's not you know, exact, it at least gives a pretty good idea from harvester to harvester. And to account for the effort in the blue crab fisheries, they recommend also that there might be under-reporting other factors, but they can be used for a trend analysis rather than an index, a true index of catch per unit effort. This is something that you had in your evaluation a couple of months ago when the control date was proposed for December. And what you see is that there was a lot of concern by the commission up to 1998 about the amount of effort, the amount of licenses. And that really started in 1999, the freeze or the moratorium on licenses. But when you look at the net effect in 2006, crab pot, which is the largest fishery, there really, if anything, has been a slight increase in the amount of licenses. Peeler pot, the same. Crab trap, I think, is the only one which shows a slight decline. Well, it shows a pretty good decline, down to 1,500 licenses or crab traps. So it really is just a cap that exists out there. And when you look at this information, you can see why effort control is hampered by latent effort, effort in waiting, in that right here in the dark bars is the amount of licenses, or I should say eligible. Those are eligible commercial fishermen. This bar indicates those that purchase licenses, and this bar, the third bar, is number of active licensees. And you can see the trend just since 2003 in that you fall off to a fairly low number of active licensees. And by active, this is really just 1 pound of harvest or more. That's all activity signifies there. So from here to here is the amount of latent effort. Similar situation, that was hard pot. This is peeler pot. You saw about 929 eligibles. When you look at the amount of harvesters, it's closer to maybe 480. And again, from here to here is your latent effort. And again, a lot of these are very marginal harvests, but at least they reported 1 pound. Latent effort has the potential to offset or reverse any progress that is made towards the future successful management of blue crabs. In addition, allowing agents whereby any person is able to fish in inactive harvester's gear, and really whereby one person can fish multiple licensees' gear, adds to the overcapacity of effort in these fisheries. In order to effectively manage effort, the Commission is encouraged to develop a strategy to address agency and transfers, agency being the agent situation. Given the historical concerns of overcapacity, it may be helpful to develop a rationalization strategy to further limit the number of participants in the fishery, recognizing that the resource cannot be simultaneously restored to historic levels of abundance while supporting the current number of participants. The Commission is encouraged to control agency, and this system further complicates the Commission's ability to address latent effort. That's the agent situation. Except for true emergency situations, no agency should be allowed. And in terms of effort control systems, during the second meeting, what was talked about was an individual transferable pot system, an ITP system, where you would first have to have a pot tagging system to know how many pots were out there. And then once you do, it could be similar in some ways to our striped bass situation, in that you could have transfer of pots from one individual to another. Fishermen could get out, could transfer their pots. That was the early discussion. A later, more refined discussion centered on individual transferable effort system, and it's similar to the POT system, individual transferable POT system, but it's in the context of allowable crab potting days or weeks. That's how you would control the effort. So anyone who has been harvesting, depending on the time frame that is used, would have a certain amount of weeks or days that they had harvested, and that could be their own ITE. The commission would have to develop a plan to address the risk of latent effort for this type of a system, an ITE system, and the POT tagging system or marking system would be a central component. It'd be important not only to get the baseline of effort, but also to follow up. Once you have an ITE, you want to ensure that those who have certain individual effort days or weeks, that they are where they are supposed to be and fishing the amount they should be fishing. Without a POT tagging system, even a well-designed ITE system would be open to abuse. And then the performance data could be trips in days. It could also be weeks. You know, those are some details which would need to be looked at. An ITE system would allow for transfers of crab harvesting days, just like the individual POT transfer system. It would allow management to modify a seasonal's crab harvesting days. And in particular, what the committee talked about, if you have a projection from the winter dredge survey that says the harvest is going to be a certain amount the next year, which it can do, and you have a projection that the exploitation rate is going to be a certain amount, which that can also do very effectively, you can scale in either direction these ITEs. You can scale them up or you can scale them down with a fair amount of certainty, really. Unlike the current management plan, which is essentially static, an effective ITE system would enable the commission to manage the resource adaptively. And I have some information here on the peeler pot fishery and also on the hard pot fishery in terms of activity and really latent effort as well. And I think that I can probably just go through them once I present you with just maybe a little bit here that although there have been a number of attempts to limit or reduce effort in those fisheries, they've resulted in caps and moratorium on license sales. So if you look at peeler potters, you see, at least when I looked at this, I see that there are a number of harvesters which are here. This is the number of harvesters, and this is the number of trips which you can take as days fished. So if you go to 21 to 30 trips, there's probably somewhere between 40 and 60 harvesters who are fishing that much. If you go to 40 days of fishing, it falls down below 40. Well, this is the peeler fishery, and May is 50 to 55%. You know, 1 month is 50 to 55% of the harvest. So, you know, that's not too surprising. What it tells me in one way is that I'm surprised that 2006 in the light blue didn't fall off even more, given the amount of product that's come out of that fishery for the last several years. It's reduced. So harvesters are still there, not a lot of harvesters. You have 929 eligible harvesters, and you don't have that many who are really doing the harvesting. Crab pot, somewhat similar. You have a certain amount of harvesters. Let's pick 100 harvesters, depending on the year, 2003 to 2006 at the bottom. And with 100 harvesters, they somewhere ranging between 31 to 40 days, where they get 31 to 40 days, where they're harvesting a pound or more. If you bring it down to, let's say, 40 harvesters, then you can see that probably somewhere in here, 130 to 150 days of the entire potting season. So I think that tells you there's a lot of latent effort. The statistics say that about 40 to 45% recently of eligible harvesters have actually been harvesting to any extent. And the recommendation on the effort control strategy from the Blue Crab Regulatory Review Committee was that they found a successful evaluation of the fisheries depend on the quantification of existing effort, which would be pot tagging, and catch per unit of effort, which right now we have sort of trend data on. Once this baseline understanding of the existing effort characteristics is established, the Commission should develop an effort control system designed to prevent overfishing and constrain fishing mortality towards that exploitation or harvest removal target. Reduction measures should encompass reduction in latent effort and the use of agents. An individual transferable effort system combined with a pot tagging program is a sound approach and offers a better probability that the annual exploitation rate will be at or near the target rate. And I would say we're not alone. This is a bay-wide situation. You saw the Maryland harvests have really dropped off more substantially than the Virginia harvest. Both have dropped off quite a bit. Both are low, but Maryland's even lower. And I know that Maryland has also been working over the last couple of months for what plans they may have as well. And that's all that I have, Commissioner. If there's any questions, and then I know Jack has some information too.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank members of the committee, including Mr. Robbins, yourself, for doing a wonderful job. I know Mr. Travelstead is going to have some recommendations for us, but just a couple observations. He made the comment that I thought was very poignant, and that is that the science has caught up with us. Anecdotally, we had seen what we had seen as far as a decline in the catch, but now the science is there. And for us not to take measures to protect this very valuable fishery would be tantamount to neglect. And as I said, the science has caught up with us on our watch, so we must take measures that I presume will cause some concern and some angst to those that earn their living on Virginia waterways. But if we don't do something, we're going to be in a real problem. As one crabber said to me, this is a little bit different than the oyster industry. We don't have disease that's really working on the crab fishery like we do in the oyster fishery. So this one, based on some short-term measures, may tend to provide long-term gain, and I'm anxious to hear the suggestions that are to be made, because I, as commissioner, don't want to see this fishery collapse on my watch. And I know that those others that are fishery scientists and those that are managers of our natural resources in the Commonwealth of Virginia, from the governor to the secretary, those involved, are concerned and are desirous to turn this issue around. So with that, I do want to extend my sincere thanks, because the report was well done and the work was long and, I know, tiring. So thank you. Mr. Travelstead. Oh, any other questions for Mr. O'Reilly? Jack?
Mr. Chairman, the take-home message here today from not only the panel of scientists but staff as well is that the management efforts of this agency since 1994 have not worked. We have, during that time period, implemented 22 different regulations, and the best we can say is that they have prevented still further declines in the resource. Rob has just told you that crab abundance today is down 70% from the early 1990s. And over the last 9 years, we have overfished the resource six of those 9 years. And in fact, we've been over target 11 out of the last 17 years. The quote that you see up there was taken from the report of the scientists. And I think the key words there are that we need to get more aggressive about managing this resource. They made a number of what I describe as short-term or immediate need measures that Rob described to you in detail. They're listed here again. And staff is recommending to you today that you, by motion, approve each of these for public hearing at the February meeting. They include eliminating the provision that allows fishermen in Chesapeake Bay and Pocomoke-Tangier Sounds to close that larger cull ring that would allow more females to escape, that we shorten the fall season by 2 weeks. I would also add to this recommendation that we also consider, unlike we did last year, not opening the crab season in the middle of March, but delay the opening back to its traditional date of April 1st. That would be an additional recommendation that's not listed here. In the peeler fishery, we would recommend that you increase the minimum size to 3.5 inches, that you define and prohibit the harvest of white sand peelers to prevent the waste that occurs in the soft crab shedding fishery, that you extend the closed season that accompanies the blue crab sanctuary by starting the closure on May 15th, its traditional start being June 1st, that you eliminate the current allowance for the use of agents in the crab fishery that allows an individual to fish another person's gear or multiple person's gear, except when true emergencies exist. The panel did recommend no further action in the winter dredge fishery except to prevent further expansion, and we'll get into that in the next slide. We would also recommend, in addition to proceeding rather quickly with implementation of the short-term measures, that you further direct staff to begin to address the following long-term measures. That is the design and implementation of an individual transferable effort system that could be used to further limit crabbing effort of individual fishermen, a system that could be adjusted on an annual basis depending upon the status of the resource, that you further direct staff to develop, once again, a crab pot tagging program that's necessary to enforce the current limits that are now in place, and that you design a program that also looks at the potential elimination of latent effort, those people who have not made use of their crabbing licenses for a long period of time, but who occasionally jump back into the fishery anytime we see a blip upward in abundance. And that abundance is immediately done away with, and at the same time they're competing against the full-time crabbers who are there for the duration. So those are our recommendations. We think they're well justified based on an 8-month review by the panel of scientists, and we recommend them for you here today.
Any questions of Jack, members of the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few comments. I'd like to begin by thanking Jack and Rob and all the staff for really doing a tremendous job on this. This was a very involved process. As Rob mentioned, it took 8 months, but staff just did a tremendous job pulling together data and pulling the database. It took extensive work to bring all that information together at the request of the panelists, and thank Dr. McConaughey as well for his service on the panel.
But sorry, Dr.
It was a it really was quite an involved process. The blue crab is an icon of Chesapeake Bay's history, having supported a vibrant fishery for well over 100 years, much to the delight of the culinary public in the Commonwealth. Despite a 22-point management plan, most of which has been in place for over a decade, the Commonwealth's iconic blue crab appears to be in trouble. While it appears that environmental conditions have played a role in the current plight of the blue crab, fishing mortality, exclusive of any natural mortality, has consistently exceeded the target level and overfishing threshold for the past decade. Consequently, the need for corrective action is immediate, and the Blue Crab Review Panel's final report makes a compelling case for management action to constrain fishing mortality toward the target and prevent overfishing. The exploitation rate has been above the target level for 8 of the past 10 years and above the overfishing threshold for 6 of the past 10 years. A decade's worth of data now indicate that overfishing is occurring consistently, and the current management plan has been unable to constrain fishing mortality at or near the target level. Consequently, stock abundance has lingered for the past decade at or near a historically low level. The panel also considered the role of the environment. and their review suggested that the low stock abundance and lack of interannual fluctuations seen in previous decades may reflect an ecological shift to a lower carrying capacity. To the extent that environmental conditions have changed, this has been a 1-2 punch for the blue crab stock, since fishing mortality has consistently exceeded the target during the past decade. The panel concluded that in the context of the current environmental conditions, corrective management action is necessary to end overfishing and constrain mortality towards the target exploitation rate. Another significant finding of the panel is the fact that the current management plan is essentially static and lacks the ability to respond to changing biological conditions. The panel's BBTAC members pointed out the fact that the winter dredge survey is a uniquely powerful predictor of harvest and should be used to manage the harvest on an annual basis. The panel concluded the most effective way to correct overfishing would be to require the development of an effective effort control system, which would necessarily be accompanied by a pot marking system. An effort control system would also give the commission the ability to manage the fishery more responsibly to changing biological conditions in order to prevent overfishing and to optimize the yield in the fishery. Since the system could include an annual specification and allocation of effort based on expected yield associated with the winter dredge survey or other biological indicators. Recognizing that it could take a full year, though, to develop an effort control system, the panel also recommended a number of interim conservation actions in order to reduce fishing mortality. The panel did caution against considering these to be a substitute for an effectively designed effort control system, but the needs for these interim actions are necessary. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we, and I think procedurally what Jack has outlined essentially is taking these short-term management measures to be immediate needs that should be vetted through the Blue Crab Committee, but go ahead and post them for public hearing next month and let the committee comment on them in the interim, and then we'll look at them as a menu next month at the commission meeting. I think though these long-term measures are extremely important. I mean, this is where we need to get in order to get a handle on this resource, and that is to have a well-developed effort control system. We're already working on that, but also to have a crab pot tagging system that complements that. And I think what Jack has proposed is exactly where we need to be. That is, let's go ahead and advertise the short-term regulatory modifications. Let the Blue Crab Committee comment on them. Let the public comment on them next month. We'll vote on them as a commission. But go ahead and initiate these longer-term goals in hopes of having an effort control system in place possibly by the 2009 fishing year.
Is that a motion?
Yes, sir.
Seconded the motion?
Yeah.
Seconded by Mr. Holland. Further discussion? Dr. McConaughey.
Yeah, I also want to commend Rob and his staff on pulling this thing together. And what was really striking about this committee is if you put 10 scientists in a room, you usually have 10 different ideas or end products. But this group was almost unanimous, or was unanimous, in saying that this fishery is in trouble. A healthy fishery, this and blue crab fishery, shows the fluctuations up and down from year to year, and we haven't seen that in more than a decade. So there has been fundamental changes in this fishery, probably due to overfishing, as well as ecological changes in the bay. And we need to look at these things. Some of the things that have changed is, of course, the low stock, spawning stock abundance, changes in the size and age at maturity, reduction in reproductive output. Numbers of eggs have come out. And what's striking is that some of these things that we're seeing now were characteristic of the cod fishery on Georgia's banks before it collapsed. And I'm not saying that this is a collapsing fishery, but we need to look at these things and be very serious about what's going on. Interesting, when I first showed up in the Chesapeake Bay area about 30 years ago, one of the things that everybody said about the blue crab population was, we need to know what effort is, and we're still looking at that. So I think the pot tagging system will get us there and give us really a good measure and a way to control that, as well as the agency processes. We've looked at lots of different things. We've put things into consideration. As Jack said, they haven't worked. We may need to tinker with them. Sanctuaries, we may have the wrong time of year to protect some of these things in terms of what's going on. But we do need to look, if you look at the number of mature females being captured outside the sanctuaries, a large part of our spawning stock appears to be out of the sanctuaries. And so we do need to think of call rings and other aspects. And I would suggest that we move ahead and look at some of the short-term things as well as get the long-term processes going.
Thank you, Dr. McConaughey. Further members of the commission? Yes, sir. Well, let me get a vote here first. It's
I'm willing to make my comment before you get a vote.
This is not a public hearing. This is only to go to public hearing, Doug. This is not a public hearing.
I realize that, but it's so many important things that have been left over there.
Well, in all due respect, we'll air those at the public hearing. Because if I don't now, it. All in favor of the motion, signify. Yes.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. One point to the motion. I just want to make sure that one of the items identified for short-term consideration is agency.
Yes.
It's a fairly broad issue. I just want to make sure that includes permit stacking. I wanted to clarify that. So.
I think it does. Absolutely.
Right.
All in favor of sending these measures to public hearing next month after they are vetted through the CRAB Review Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries. In all due respect, gentlemen, CRAB Review Committee and public hearing, and we'll spend as much time as necessary so we hear what you've got to say, because you've got many years in the fishery, too, and I look forward to it. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the flounder issue.
Rob has had to go on to his other meeting, but we can get through this fairly quickly.
Boy, I hope.
This is a request for public hearing to, again, comply with the